We'll be studying this morning from the book of 1 Corinthians, the 16th chapter, the first six verses. As I have prepared myself and as I have studied the scriptures, I'm convinced that the subject that we're involved with for these past few weeks has been a very important source of tremendous truths and information. Here's my schedule, God willing. Next Sunday, I'll be preaching from the 8th chapter of 2 Corinthians, and then I'll be away October the 3rd for a homecoming service at Liberty Baptist Church in Little Rock. They've asked me to come and preach their special service that morning. And then on October the 10th, I'll be preaching from the 9th chapter of 1 Corinthians. Because all of these things, I think, are so helpful to us, because we can see what people can do who are people like us. This was not a perfect church. They had a lot of serious problems. And yet, when it came to being touched by the plight of the poor saints at Jerusalem and at other parts of the world, the Bible tells us that their generosity excelled even the expectation of the Apostle Paul. I want to read some scriptures this morning that will lead us to this chapter that we're studying, particularly the first six verses of chapter 16 in 1 Corinthians. And by way of introduction, I would simply read to you what Paul said about money. And that's what we're really considering, is money. And I think we ought not to be ashamed or duck our heads when we talk about it. It is an integral part of our lives. It is important to us. We all know that we could not live very well or very long without money. So it's not a taboo subject at all. And it is addressed many times in scriptures. And we studied about money or giving under the Old Testament system and the pre-Mosaic system, and then what Jesus said about money. And I want us to look at some of these things that give us the background for why the Corinthians should take a collection. 1 Timothy 6:10, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. I know that our Bible state in the King James Version, all evil, but it really has in it the idea of just every kind of evil. What is meant by the term root? Well, the very basic cause of so many problems and so many evils in the world is brought about by money, not money itself. It's explained in the other words of this verse, which while some coveted after, and we know that covet means to want what you don't have. It may even mean to want what you can't get. So we can lust or covet for many things, not just money. But we may covet money because it can help us so much, relieve so many anxieties, relieve so much pressure from our lives. If we have adequate money, it makes our life better if we understand how to use it. We should not covet after it. And here's why. For those that have, they have erred from the faith. Now remember, the faith is the system of doctrine and beliefs that Christians believe. It hasn't kept them from being Christians. It hasn't kept them from being saved. But coveting money has caused some to err from the faith. And the word err here means to take a different pathway, to stray from the accepted path or road. They have strayed from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. In other words, it's a self-inflicted wound. It's something we do to ourselves when we covet money and let it get hold of our lives to such an extent that it leads us down the wrong path to do things we know we shouldn't do. And in doing that, we literally pierce our own selves with many, many sorrows. Now in Acts chapter 11, verse 27-29, "And in those days," or these days, "came prophets from Jerusalem unto Antioch. And there stood up one of them named Agabus, and signified by the Spirit that there should be a great dearth," that is a drought, "throughout all the world, which came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar." So we're thinking about the poor saints at Jerusalem, but there was a serious drought throughout the known world during the reign of Claudius Caesar. And when Agabus made this prophecy, the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea. Now that's the Jewish people, especially the city of Jerusalem. Then in Acts chapter 24, verse 16 and 17, "And herein do I exercise myself," that is, this is what I strive to achieve, and that's what he means by exercise, "to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and men." And this is Paul writing or speaking. "Now after many years I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings." Paul said, "I know my conscience is clear toward God. I've done what he has taught me to do. But when I heard about my people in Judea and Jerusalem especially, suffering because they were Christians," Paul said, "I finally got to relieve what my conscience was urging me to do, and that is to bring an offering to the poor saints in Jerusalem." Then in the Roman letter, chapter 15, verses 25 through 28, this is written. Paul said, "But now I go unto Jerusalem to minister unto the saints. For it hath pleased them of Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem. It has pleased them verily, and their debtors they are. For if the Gentiles have been made partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is also to minister unto them in carnal things." In other words, the Jewish people, and Jesus Christ was born into a Jewish family, the Jewish people ministered to the Gentiles by preaching to them the gospel of Jesus Christ. That was a spiritual thing that gave them spiritual life. Now that this has occurred, these Gentiles with spiritual life should be willing to help the Jewish people with the physical needs they have in their lives. And they were debtors to the Jewish people, and so it's their duty to minister to them in carnal things. "When therefore I have performed this and have sealed to them this fruit, I will come by you into Spain." In other words, Paul's making plans to go to Spain. He understands there are a number of churches that are collecting offerings that he can carry with him or send some approved brother with to the city of Jerusalem to relieve their suffering. Now in Galatians 4:10, here's this statement. He's talking about when the apostles met, and they met to talk with Paul. And Paul told them, "God has called me to be a missionary to the Gentiles." And they began to say, "Well, can the Gentiles really become full-time servants of God? And if they haven't been under the law, will they know how to worship God? Will they know how to live as they should?" So they discussed these things. And here was one of the things they decided on, that the churches that are Gentile churches should do. "Only that we should remember the poor, the same which I also was forward to do. That is, Paul, can you really assure us that you will teach the Gentiles to be liberal in their giving, giving of alms and giving an offering? So this has been an important part of the spread of the gospel, not just how to be saved, but how to serve. And so we're reading this morning of the collection, and here's why there is going to be a collection. That's what the scriptures tell us. A severe drought in the known world, plus the Christians at Jerusalem, because on the day of Pentecost, some 3,000 made public professions of faith. Then some 5,000 later made professions of faith. And this was on the day of Pentecost that 3,000 made this profession of faith and were baptized. So they have come from all parts of the world. And instead of going home like they normally would, they have stayed in Jerusalem so they can learn all about Jesus Christ and who He was. And this has put a heavy financial burden on the saints at Jerusalem to be hospitable and to feed all these people that have come from all over the known world. I think there's about 28 different tongues that are mentioned in the second chapter of Acts. So there's a tremendous pressure because these people are losing everything they've got because they have converted to Christianity. They're losing their land. They're losing their homes. They're outcasts. They have no defense for who they are. They're blasphemers against God. They're hunted down. Their lives are at stake. So they're huddling together at Jerusalem for protection and for information. But their money is running out. That's why you read of people selling everything they have. They had and bringing it and laying it at the apostles' feet so that all of the people can be fed. And there's a problem between the Hellenistic Jews and the Jews that had never gone to other places of the world and who had stayed in Judea. And so we had deacons that came in who could distribute the food properly and everybody could get fed. It was a crisis time. So these people are very poor. They need help. Paul knows it. It's several years later. They've not recovered. They won't recover. We've got to make sure they're taken care of. Now, I wanted to explain that to you so you wouldn't believe that I am speaking to you about building a building. I'm not. I'm not speaking to you about great numbers in our congregation. I'm not. What I'm talking about is a pattern that is set about what we call church polity. That is, how can we handle our church finances? Do we have a pattern that will give us solid information that we can use as a congregation of people to meet the needs of the church, to take care of the things that need to be taken care of? And that's why I'm looking at the last chapter in the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 16. That letter was written. Then the next letter, 2 Corinthians, there's a lot more information. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. So that you can see that everyone can give. That there's a very simple process that all of us can follow in order to give as we should. So that all of the needs of the congregation can be taken care of. It's so simple. That's why I'm looking at these scriptures, especially from 1 and 2 Corinthians. Paul writes, now concerning the collection. And the collection is simply a gathering. It means everyone putting something into a central treasure. You'll see how that is supposed to be done. Now concerning the collection or the gathering for the saints, as I have given order, that is, it has in it the idea to arrange orderly. It's not a command. It is, I've given them an order that they can follow, a list, an order of service, if you please, so that they will comprehend how this collection can be achieved. As I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. That is, I'm giving you the same information that I gave them. Upon the first day of the week, as we all know, the first day of the week is what we term Sunday. Paul had given to them the order that they should follow. It should be on the first day of the week. Let every one of you lay by him in store. That is, let him treasure up. It doesn't talk about writing checks or anything of that nature, but make a specific place, do a specific willing thing. Now here's the guide. Here's what we're supposed to do on the first day of the week. Look at what you've earned that week. For he states, as God hath prospered him. Now this word prosper means to walk in a good way. So what do on Sunday morning? You look at what has happened to you the past week. That past week. Has God led you in a good way? Has your life been a pleasant journey? Have you been, quote, blessed of God? That's what the word prosperity means here. As God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. So here's the point. On every Sunday morning, look back on the week that has just been before. Think about what happened. Think about not only the good things, but think about other things. Think about your job. Think about your paycheck. Just consider things. And was it a good week? Was it a week that you believe that God gave you in everything that happened to you this past week? Now, using that as a guide, then lay aside and put into a offering envelope or put it in your mind, cash, it doesn't make any difference. Think about it and use the proportion that you have there. And in verses 13 and 14, and I'm not going to go that far this morning, but he says in connection with this, watch ye stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong. And in verse 14, let your things be done with charity or love. So this involves so many things. It involves a weekly check up of our lives on this earth. And that's not a bad thing to do. And maybe you don't do it on Saturday night. Maybe you don't do it on Saturday at noon. Maybe it is Sunday morning that you say, let's stop and think about this. Was this a good week? Did God lead me in good paths, paths of righteousness? How did it go? Okay. Out of my love for God, for what he did for me, this is what I will put in the treasure. I will take it with me to church on Sunday morning, and I will put it into a central treasure. And that'll be kept there until Paul comes by. When Paul comes by, it'll all be ready and waiting for him. Paul said that there be no gatherings when I come. And this avoids what many churches have been guided by, and that is after the fact, or what we might term a crisis kind of giving. In other words, let's look and see how much money came in today. We know there's not enough to pay the preacher and pay the bills and all that, so we got to pass the plate around again and get enough money to get through this crisis. That is not a good way for a church to operate. When I was probably 4 or 5 years old, across the field in front of us, there was a black congregation. They met in a school that my grandfather and my father had helped get built for them so that they could educate their children. They helped them get their teachers. And they also helped them financially to pay a preacher to come from Walnut Ridge or Hoxie and preach to them on Saturday nights and Sunday mornings and Sunday evenings. And I remember well my dad and I walking through the fields in paths, of course, and we would sit with them and we would worship with them. And my dad went primarily to see that they had enough money to pay their preacher for that trip. They would sing and take an offering, and they would count it. And then the head deacon would pronounce, "We're $2 short." They would sing and take the offering, and he would count and say, "Now we're 76 cents short." And all the time, Dad is giving me money so I can put in 2 cents or 5 cents or a nickel. After about 4 offerings, it came out to the penny. And when they got through with raising his money for that trip, then he preached. And I remember that he preached. And I don't mean he delivered a lecture, he preached. He kept a handkerchief lying on his pulpit, and he would, because he was getting hot. It was hot in there, but it was good. That's what I call crisis giving. If the air conditioner goes out, and I tell you on Sunday morning, we don't have enough money for the air conditioner, we just got to raise $5,000 this morning. And I said, "Oh, well." So did you get enough, Brother Treasurer? "Well, we're about $1,000 short." "Well, I don't know. We'll talk about that." Liberality will solve those problems, people. Liberality will solve those problems. We have never, ever had to do that when we were Southwest Missionary Baptist Church or North Bryant Baptist Church. There's never been a time from the pulpit for 40-something years when I had to say, "Brethren, we just don't have enough money to meet our obligations. We got to do so and so." Why? Because people gave liberally when there wasn't a crisis. Because they were being faithful to God. Because God had led them in a good way. Or God had been with them especially in some tragedy and they were thankful to God for it. So Paul said, "I will take your liberality," which is literally a joyous gift, not only to the receivers, but a joyous gift because they give because of their love for God. "Now I will come unto you when I shall pass through Macedonia, for I do pass through Macedonia. And it may be that I will abide, yes, and winter with you, that ye may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go." Now remember, there's no fax machines, there's no telephones, there are nothing that you can do except to send a messenger with a letter. And it takes weeks and months. So while Paul, when they received this letter, the first letter to the Corinthians, Paul expected them to do exactly like all the other churches that he had visited and where he preached, to do like they were doing, that they would give in order as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do you. So he introduced a system by which the church could cooperate in alleviating the starving, suffering situation of God's people. Now, in 2 Corinthians, you will see how Paul is just absolutely overwhelmed. He staggers because of the amount that these people gave. Now, if you can surprise the Apostle Paul and go over his expectations, You'd have to really, really have a sum or a collection that would really be indicative of some heartfelt giving. And I'll tell you what. I believe that heartfelt giving will do more than anything else. Now we'll see how Paul also gives instructions about, look, God doesn't expect you to give what you don't have. There's so much sensibleness in what Paul writes to this church. I just want to share it with you because it doesn't put everybody in the same category, except in the category of freedom and liberty and love and gratitude. And Paul realized that some people can't, he said, give according to a man what a man hath and not what he hath not. There's so much information here that makes us mature and grown people in that part of our life that has to do with money. I hope you'll be as encouraged. I hope you'll be taught so that this is just a part of your life and it's not something you do occasionally, but on the first day of the week, every week. It's teaching us to be what we ought to be, as free men and women under God, under the grace of God, forgiven of our sins, washed in His blood. The Lord loveth a cheerful giver. All these things are taught here in the Bible, and I want to show you why they were taught, how they were taught, and what it means for all of us as members of this congregation of people.